So welcome, everybody, to All About Symbian Insight number 69. I'm in charge. Rafe's back from Monaco, believe it or not, and Ewan's there in Scotland. Are you there, Rafe?
Yes, I am, Steve. I'm ready to go.
You there, Ewan?
I am, yes, and I'm not sounding as eager as Rafe, unfortunately. My apologies.
And Rafe just got in at 2 a.m. last night after the flight back, so he's special bonus points and brownie points for Rafe there. On with the news. Nokia 5800 is launching the next week or so in Brazil and Mexico. Launching with comes with music. So the first they've seen of this particular device is with comes with music. And after Ewan's editorial last week, I just wondered if he's got any thoughts. 3 million sold in 3 months so far, and we criticised comes with music as being an uninspiring offering. But launching in these markets with comes with music, do you think they'll succeed?
Well, obviously not for the first month, because everybody in Mexico is going to be staying indoors. But after that, it remains to be seen. Certainly when you get into these countries where the... what's the easiest way to describe this? The money that they earn isn't as much as over here certainly in Western Europe. The attractiveness of comes with music increases, because even though there's local pricing, music's comparatively more expensive over there, which is why these subscription deals or pseudo subscription comes with music is obviously one of them, are actually going to be quite important. The question, of course, more to the point is, will it succeed? Is will Nokia actually give us any numbers to work with? Because part of the editorial was saying the problem is we don't have raw numbers. We have guesswork. We have things coming down from industry labels. It's like looking into a big dark room and trying to decide if it's full of men in a sauna or women in a sauna. Obviously, the result is slightly different. Rafe, wonder, just to skip ahead very briefly, if there was any sort of talk of numbers and stats on the sort of comes with music coming out from Nokia.
There wasn't anything specific on the numbers, although I did have a chance to catch up with some of the Nokia people behind Nokia Music, and obviously comes with music is part of that. And there's definitely, I think there's something to be said for Nokia Music, and comes with music will be launched, as you say, launching in Brazil. And actually, that's the first Latin American country. And I think Nokia have quite high hopes there, partly for some of the reasons you've outlined, and partly because there isn't much in the way of music services there, at least not from the big global brands. And it'll be an interesting one to watch. And we've talked about comes with music in the UK mainly. And I think it would be fair to say that even Nokia acknowledged it was not the success that they hoped it would be there, and that, you know, as a launch country, it didn't do as well as they expected. And they're certainly planning to rectify that, and I think we'll see comes with music make a comeback in the UK later in the year. But they were talking about numbers to an extent anyway, with Singapore, where sort of comes with music with the 5800, which I think the device itself has made a difference, has taken a very significant chunk of the Singapore digital music market, up to about 30%, I think it was. And that's when we're talking, you know, a very serious impact in the way it's having on that particular market. And they're also talking about the effect on the long tail. But as before, the issue with comes with music is still that, you know, the music labels are relatively reluctant to put a price on 1 year's worth of music as they see it, which is why it's sort of obfuscated by being part of a device rather than being available on its own. So, you know, there's been some criticism comes with music recently, but I think it's still the right idea. It just does need careful handling in terms of the devices you pair it with and how you market it. The UK is an example of how it's done very badly. Singapore's an example of where it's gone well. And we're going to probably see a relaunch, or at least stage phase two in the UK shortly.
Staying with numbers, I think the Nokia 5800 worldwide is coming up on 4 million sales now after just over 4 months on the market. How does that compare with, for example, iPhone sales, Rafe? You're the man with the numbers in his head.
Million a month? The only one I can directly compare with at the moment are the Q1 figures, which I think it was about 3 million for Q1 for the 5800. Maybe slightly less than that. And I think the iPhone was about 3.5 million or maybe 4 million. So they're actually relatively close together. Of course, you know, with the iPhone and to an extent the Nokia sales, they're, you know, always a bit lower in Q1. And Nokia say at the moment they have a run rate of about 1,500,800s a month. And I think leading up to the sort of new iPhone, which will presumably be coming out in June, historically the iPhone's weakest quarter has been Q2. because of the expectation of a new device. So I think it would be probably fair to say the 5800 will outsell the iPhone in Q2. Then as we move into Q3, it'll probably be the other way round, although you'll have the N97 coming on stream, and maybe a figure to look for would be a combined 5800 N97 sales. And looking at the percentage of the market in terms of touch that each manufacturer is taking, because Nokia with the 5800 took 20% of the touch market in Q1, which isn't very impressive compared to their normal market share. But given they've done that with one device, you know, with more touch devices from Nokia on the way, they're certainly making a comeback, albeit a bit late in the day as far as touch concerned.
We shouldn't be. One shouldn't forget, of course, that Samsung are also producing S60 devices, and I think this is the year when they do get their act together. And we'll start seeing the Omnia HD selling in good numbers by the middle of the year.
Yeah, no, I think we can probably expect to see Omnia HD on the market probably within the next 3 weeks or so, certainly before the end of May. And I think it's probably safe to say Samsung will have more S60 devices before the end of the year.
Yeah, okay, moving on with news. Bobber, what on earth is Bobber?
Apart from the character in Star Wars that is most likely to come back as an indigestion tablet, Bobber is a new mobile virtual world for your handset. Now, there are a lot of these, but Bobber has a couple of advantages going for it. The first one is it's from the guy behind Habbo Hotel, which was bigger than Second Life before Second Life was even existing. And also, it's specifically designed to run on a mobile handset. It's an isometric viewed world, all made up of disconnected rooms. So rather like a chat room or on IRC, you log in, you create your avatar. You've got maybe about 8 to 10 options for your head, your trousers, your body, and your hair. There's no extra bits or user generated. It's just what you're supplied with to start with. But it is in early beta, so we'd expect it to grow up. Once you've got your character, you build a small room yourself, put it full of furniture and things, and invite your friends in, or go to your friends' places, or go exploring. Now, it's separate rooms, so you use a menu to navigate between all these rooms rather than walk from building to building as you would in some of these larger games. But in essence, it is a big, massive 3D avatar-based chat room. It may appeal to many people. It really does depend on what sort of company you get. I think the best thing we can say is, one, it's in beta and it's still growing in terms of numbers of people joining into the world, and I may well get around to setting up an all about Simu room at some point just to see if we can get some traffic in there. It's one to keep an eye on.
What sort of compatibility are we talking about?
It's at the moment it's up for S60, and I've not gone through the full gamut of phones to actually find out what it's available. Let me just go to the website and press the supported phone. Nokia Series 60 third edition, and it's listing pretty much everything of FP1, okay. FP2. It also interestingly rolls back to Series 60 second edition as well. And for once, it's the iPhone version coming soon, not the Nokia phone version coming soon. I like that.
Is it just perhaps worth saying for those who aren't familiar with Habbo Hotel, is that's very popular, particularly in the youth market in certain European markets. And so this kind of virtual world stroke chat room, although it doesn't appeal to everyone, does have significant appeal to sort of some segments. And I can't say it's something I've ever used, but I'm told that it's you know, also something of a cash spinner, the sort of trading of virtual goods in the virtual world, but having to pay real currency for them.
Indeed, it's very similar to Habbo Hotel, and of course that already has a justification and presence in the market, which legitimizes the operation here. I would expect to see both targeted advertising and items for sale inside the Bobber world once everything gets sorted out, which will provide them with an immediate income stream.
Okay, thanks, Ewan. Moving on with news, Nokia 5800 version 21 firmware is now out in many markets for unlocked handsets. I think I'm finally getting to grips with Nokia's numbering system on their firmware upgrades. They launch with V10, and then it goes to V11, V12, and then usually there's a jump to V20, at which point you've suddenly got the full feature set that they intended. They finally got around to coding, and they fixed most of the bugs. You then have version 21, where they fix nearly all the bugs within that feature set.
Quote Douglas Adams and say that Nokia's numbering system shall now be replaced with something even more incomprehensible and misunderstandable.
Indeed. And then you have, at some point later, if it sells well enough, they introduce a version 3 or a version 30, and then as with the N95 8 gig and N82, a version 31, again fixing the minor bugs and issues in that sort of next generation firmware, which introduces extra features. Now, the whole point of this rant is that this discussion is that the 5800 is currently got version 21, and it doesn't really introduce any new significant features over version 20, but is well worth having. I've run it up for the last couple of days, and it really makes the device slicker and easier to use. It's faster in web, faster to render pages, faster to scroll around, certainly faster to move in and out of the applications menu, and everything just seems smoother, snappier. And if you look at the news story on All About Symbian, in one of the comments, someone very kindly posted the official Nokia changelog listing the, I think, about 20 or 30 minor bugs that were fixed in this firmware. So if you can upgrade to version 21, then do plug into Nokia software update or try over the air. It's well worth having. Ovi Store is not launching with carrier billing in the USA. You wrote this story. Take it away.
Yeah, they have taken it away. Exactly. Oh, look at that, holding the door open. Thank you very much. You were almost as funny as Hardman Crow there. Okay, right then. So carrier billing is where you can buy an application from software on your device, and rather than it looking up your credit card details in a database the second time or inputting them on the first time, they will be able to just have it appear on your bill. Now, this can be done with reverse SMS or using billing technologies that the networks may or may not provide. It obviously reduces the amount of hoops that a user has to go through to buy a bit of software. Thus, the theory goes that they will spend more money or spend the same amount of money on lots of smaller things. Without carrier billing, the Ovi Store is still in the same position as the iPhone App Store, the BlackBerry Store, and so on, which people will have to submit the credit card details somewhere. This is what you have to do with the Nokia Comes With Music as well, incidentally. And you know, you'll have to put in a password or some sort of token phrase when you're ready to make a purchase. It's not a great loss right now, but it would have been a great product differentiator at the launch of the Ovi Store. I'm sure that all the carriers around the world would love to get their hands on the money that these game sales are making, but perhaps they don't want to give that sort of benefit to Nokia and give them access to the customer as well. They're still quite, the networks are still quite precious of their customer. But on the other hand, you know, the customers would probably buy more, and the networks would make more money from their cut. There's a huge amount of closed-door politics on here. Rafe, You've probably been looking at this, because I know you've been looking at Ovi from the publisher side of things as well, haven't you?
Yes, an Ovi Store is obviously one of the fundamental things that's happening this year in the sort of Nokia ecosystem. But the thing about the US, it's irrelevant at the moment. There aren't enough Nokia devices there to really make a difference, so I wouldn't expect it to launch with operator billing to start with, because, you know, Ovi Store, you know, in the US, well, yes, it would be nice to have, but there are other markets where there are more potential customers, so line up those ones first. I do agree there's something of a perception issue with the sort of online blogs and maybe some of the media commentary that we'll see around Ovi Store, because people will complain about it not being there. But in terms of the actual market, I don't see it as a major issue. Obviously, it's something I'd like to see come on in the future, and actually more payment systems in general would be good. And it's not just the obvious ones like PayPal. I think in a lot of countries there's various mobile cash payment methods. One developer was telling me that in Holland, for example, you can send a SMS message or an email and pay for something from, if you have a Rabobank bank account, just by sending an SMS or an email. That kind of thing actually I think would be just as important. And say in India, the Click Cash that I think we have on the Engage system now, that sort of thing, bigger market, you know, is more important. There's also, you know, still questions around premium SMS, how willing developers will be to use it, because it takes a much bigger chunk of the revenue share. They only get the 70-30 split after operator charges have been taken out, and operator charges are much bigger than credit card payment charges. So although some people are going to get hot under the collar about this, I'm afraid I can't really get too excited or too bothered by it, to be honest.
We're going to have to really work to find something to get you excited about, I think.
Oh, you'll manage that later when I'm talking about the Nokia Developer Summit, Ewan.
Ooh, okay. I'll get the popcorn. Hold on.
two more bits of news. First of all, Google do keep upgrading their mobile app suite. As regular readers to the site will know, I do keep an eye on their mobile page. The YouTube client's now up to 2.0.11. Mainly bug fixes are making it run more reliably on different handsets. I suspect the YouTube client hasn't got very much further to go in terms of functionality. It's more or less done, but it works very well. The Maps is up to version 3.0.1.5. I suspect this has got quite a way to go. As Latitude gets rolled out, their social location networking system gets rolled out onto up to other platforms, I suspect there's a lot more integration going to happen and a lot more making it easier to use. So I'll keep an eye on Google Maps. The question I have for you, Ewan, though, Gmail, currently there's just this pokey old Java client, and it's been kicking around for quite a while. It hasn't been updated for ages. Do you think we're ever likely to see a native S60 Gmail client?
That is a very interesting one, because I use the Google Mail client on my handset most of the time, rather than the messaging application. And I actually find that the client, I don't notice that it's Java. It's got a huge number of options. It's had a significant improvement about 3 or 4 months ago. They created more speed, smaller fonts, more stuff. And I think I'm going to come down on the side of it doesn't matter. I think the client is actually pretty spiffy and does everything it needs to do at a good speed already. Do they need to put in the engineering time to create a C++ version for minimal gain? I don't think so. I think this is 80-20 rule, and they've hit 80 quite comfortably, whereas something like Google Latitude needs the extra power of the graphics, the access to the extra functionality in a handset, which makes it significantly easier to get up to a decent functionality level using C++. So, no.
The two main things I was thinking of, and the ways I noticed that it's a Java application, is one is that the access point selection. You can't say, okay, this is my access point, please use this and stop asking me every time, whereas you could with a native S60 app. And also the fact that there is a startup speed penalty of whatever it is, 6 or 7 seconds, whereas a native application, you'd be able to start in under a second.
So those, I think that just does come down to project management. I mean, how much time would they have to put into the C++ client and certify and test it over all the devices and over all the carriers compared to that 6-second overload? It's one of those finely balanced equations that every software developer will be completely aware of. And I think Google have come down on the right side here.
Yeah, I suspect, though, there are a few S60 fans in Google's development teams. They're famed for having their, 20% of their time on pet projects. And I suspect, as we've seen things like the YouTube native S60 client come out, that there will be more native Google S60 apps. Now, I'm still hoping for an S60 Gmail app, because that would just about make my day.
I think the thing to consider about that, though, is that something like Gmail is quite well served by using it with Nokia messaging, in terms of being able to do a lot of what your core email task that way, and it doesn't necessarily need a separate messaging client. And I think the Java version has always been aimed at adding a better mail experience onto devices that have poor mail clients. And at one point it was true of S60, it didn't have a very good email offering just out of the basic messaging application, but Nokia messaging on the more recent devices is changing that. The only other thing I'd add is that Java performance has improved significantly over the years, and if you Nokia E75, I think it is, has the most recent Java runtime that also does some useful things in terms of the default options on connections, so you only get asked once per session or once in a device's lifetime. They've improved the usability of that. That was available before in user settings, but they're actually making it more upfront. And so that combination of improved Java experience plus the fact that you don't really need a separate email application, just there's a good one on the device, kind of takes away from the impetus to maybe do a native S60 application perhaps.
Yeah, but Google equals free in most people's eyes. Google love doing things for free. Nokia messaging is free now because it's in beta, but aren't Nokia going to start charging an arm and a leg for this?
Well, you'll be charged for the push email version of it, but not for the sort of manual send and receive version of it.
Okay, so if people are just using Nokia messaging to access an IMAP or a POP3 mailbox, that will remain free forever?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, that's good news. Okay, moving on to our last item of news before we let Rafe loose. on the hordes. Age of
you
Empires.
Make it sound like it's going to be a bad thing. He's been at Monaco. He's going to be reporting on one of the greatest flagship events that developers have in the early part of the 21st century, Steve. Don't do him a disservice.
Let's not overdo it, Ewan.
Okay, well, fair enough.
The last item of news, Age of Empires 3, now out on Engage. Ewan, I gather you've at least got around to installing this, yeah?
Yes, and it installs quite nicely. Blue bar goes across the bottom of the screen and then asks you what you'd like to. Age of Empires 3, it's a real-time strategy game. So unlike a game where you say, well, I want to move my soldiers there in the next turn and decide where everything's moving, then press go, you have your turn and your opponent has your turn. Real time means when you make those decisions, it happens immediately and the game clock continues to run. So while you're deciding what to do with maybe some of your soldiers, your opponent might be building a great big fort at exactly the same time. Now, Age of Empires 3, obviously the preceding titles have been over a number of platforms. Those of you looking for the chronology, this is a game set in the time of the Ottoman Empire, and you take the part of the Maltese Islanders, speeding back the hordes. Basically, it fits in just before the plot of the Age of Empires 3 on the PC game actually starts. Three main modes here, campaign mode, which is an ongoing story about the entire invasion, skirmish, which is essentially a quick battle, and two-player multiplayer gaming over the Engage arena. Isometric view, it's very much your collect stuff, build stuff, use that to make better armies, and when you think you're ready, attack the other guy style of classical wargaming.
Yeah, is this Engage Arena multiplayer mode? So are there any lag effects? Does it matter that you're battling someone across the internet as it's a real-time game?
You'd have to have a look at my review back on All About Engage for that. I don't think that it'd be fair to spoil it here. Let's try some traffic to the site, shall we? Either that or I've not tried that bit yet.
Okay, let's move on. Find to our final point on this particular insight. Rafe has been in Monaco, Nokia Developer Summit 2009. Okay, Rafe, take it away. What were your impressions? What were the main things to take away for our listeners?
All right, so obviously there was a lot going on here, so I'm going to try and be as brief as possible, which I'm sure some of you are already laughing at, and go through what I think were my main takeaways from the summit. And there will be other things that I think I'll come back to in future podcasts and also obviously on the site as well. But the sort of the big headline item for me was that Nokia said that very strongly the idea of reducing development costs and reducing how difficult it was to develop for the S60 platform, or if you like, increasing the sort of speed with which you can do things. And this was sort of tied into the fact that Symbian C++ has a reputation of being difficult to develop for. Now, there have been some things done to improve this, most recently which are the new L classes in Symbian C++, but there's still a lot of debate around just how easy or difficult it is. But it is fair to say that it is harder to develop for, I think, than say the Palm Pre platform or the iPhone and possibly even Android. A lot of it depends on your experience. Once you've learnt it, it's an elegant platform, but it is fairly different. Ask a developer and you'll get a different answer each time. So as a result of that, Nokia were very strongly pushing web runtime and QT, with web runtime being sort of now and QT maybe being a year or so down the road. Maybe not so long. You can play with it now, but in terms of maturity, I'd look maybe 6 to 18 months down the road. And web runtime is obviously using web technologies, but the important thing here is what they refer to as the platform services part of it, and this is using JavaScript API calls to be able to access things on the phones. And it's as simple as the contacts database or getting GPS information. In the future, we're going to have more stuff added, for example, the ability to access the camera, and this will go on, and there's going to be tie into some of the Nokia services. And I mean, talking to developers, they seem to think this was the right way to go, and I agree, because for about 80% of applications, you can probably develop it in web runtime. And, you know, various people were rolled out to demonstrate how much quicker this was. And one of the things going on at Nokia Developer Summit was the Nokia sort of hackathon for widgets. And this was taking an idea that had come up from a consumer. Nokia ran a competition about that earlier in the year, if you recall, and getting some of their top developers from third-party companies, the likes of Plasmo, and others, to take a look at it and say, what can we do in 2 days to implement this idea using web runtime? And frankly, it was pretty impressive what they were able to come up with. There were three finalists that I saw a detailed demo of, and one of which was a kind of a trip planning widget, which tied into Twitter to get extra information. One of which was a shopping list, which implemented a basic shopping list very well, but then also would use location to see whether you were near a shop where you could buy that particular item, and also sharing with contacts, so you could share, say, with your partner a shopping list and make sure they get the right things if they're near the shops. The winning one was actually sort of from Plasmo, sort of combined social networks together in a sort of location mashup, if you will, and we'll have more on that on the site shortly. But it was really the ability to create that in just 2 days. So as I say, web runtime and Qt being really pushed, and Qt, for example, is a part of the Symbian 4 platform, or is proposed to be, I should say. Symbian 4 is, I think, expected the end of 2010, possibly.
Is that Symbian 4, as in the number 4?
Yes, that's the number 4. This is obviously working titles.
Because that's going to cause a problem out in the Far East.
Yes, well, this is the Symbian Foundation sort of release plan, and Symbian 1 is effectively what we have now, or Symbian to the power 1, depending on how you talk about it. And then Symbian to the power 2 is effectively S65th edition feature pack 1, and Symbian to the power 3 is, I think, the first community release. Anyway, as I say, well, that's getting a bit technical, so we'll have some
What is this? Look into a mirror and say Symbian 8 times and have an operating system appear in front of you.
Yes, well, there were some jokes going around about Symbian Foundation's branding. I'm actually more of a fan than I used to be on that, but I think that's another topic. So I promise to try and be brief. So we've dealt with that sort of web runtime in Qt, and as I just want to emphasize, they were really being pushed, and Symbian C++ got relatively few mentions during the developer summit, which is a big contrast to what you'd have had a few years ago. The other big push was Ovi as a platform for developers to work on, and this is the idea that you'll be able to use APIs to build stuff on top of existing Ovi services. And one of the sort of existing examples of this is how in Share Online you can connect to other services such as Flickr or Mobi Picture, Vox and others to upload your media to, rather than just being, you know, Ovi Share. And that's going to be extended in terms of what you'll be able to do with it, and third-party developers will be able to tie in as well. But, you know, something like Share Online is relatively limited. Nokia were also promoting what they referred to as apps on maps, which is the idea that, you know, Nokia Maps will have a API layer, and it will be based on web technologies and fit in with web runtime, so people can build services on top of Nokia Maps. And it's still pretty early on, and Nokia are looking for sort of ideas and have some early partners to work with them on the beta SDK, and that's being run through callingallinnovators.com. But this is kind of thinking about the service layer, which is Ovi in the case of Nokia, becoming a programmable layer, just as the operating system is a programmable layer. And Nokia, you know, will be providing the base set of services, but then in order to have differentiation in each of the local markets, they want third-party developers to build their services on top of that. And we've talked about how location is a core element for many sort of future application possibilities on mobile, and this is how it will work in practice. And I think it's probably fair to say we'll see similar APIs for some of Nokia's other services. It's a bit difficult to explain in a podcast, so I'll try and do my best to explain it in the site in more detail. But I think another example you could take from this, and it was actually talked about as a separate issue with Nokia messaging, which we mentioned earlier in this podcast. And this is the idea that third-party developers can tie into Nokia messaging to be the sort of the way they can add chat to their application, or the way they can add any sort of social messaging to our application. And you might think at the moment, Nokia messaging, that's just about email. But one of the things that was talked about was the roadmap for Nokia messaging. So Nokia messaging 1.0 is all about email. Nokia messaging 2.0 will add in instant messaging, and that should be available sometime in the next few months via beta labs. So that takes it to email and instant messaging. But Nokia Messaging 3.0, which is probably going to cause some of the most excitement, will include social messaging. And what they mean by that is aggregating live streams from social networks. So you can see something like Facebook, for example, becoming part of Nokia Messaging, because Nokia see Nokia Messaging as the hub to do all messaging on your device, be it email, IM, or the social messaging, which has become, you know, is the main activity on social networks. The MySpace chap speaking at the conference, for example, said that 80% of the activity on social networks was around messaging rather than anything else. And so you'd also see third parties tying into that messaging framework and either, as I say, adding social messaging of their own or adding chat to their application. And for example, one was given you could be watching a football match and chatting with your friends. So it's also it's the social element as well there. So there's a lot of detail there, and as I said, it's quite difficult to explain. I think the final thing I'd draw out from the Nokia Developer Summit was OviStore was being pushed as a way of providing revenue for developers. And this is obviously a subject close to developers' heart and has been a problem in the future on Symbian. There hasn't really been a distribution mechanism that has worked really well or a way for developers to make money. And Nokia is saying, we're giving you open access to our global marketplace of millions of devices, and OviStore is it. And I had a first look at the client, and I think it's fair to say it still needs some work. But it will be coming out sometime in May, not May the 1st as we originally anticipated, but before the end of May, OviStore will be available for download for some devices and as a mobile site for other devices. And going forward, it's going to be incredibly important. And nearly every developer I said to either had already submitted something or was thinking about it or was keeping a very close eye on it, because this is the way to sort of reach the, as I say, hundreds of millions of Nokia customers. It won't be that big to start with, and there are issues. We've already talked about operator billing, but there's also in-application payment that some people want to do, say, for downloading extra levels for games or issues around DRM. But, you know, this is something that Nokia can't afford to get wrong, basically, because this is their monetization strategy for third-party developers. So there is a less than brief summary of Nokia Developer Summit. And as I say, there's more to come, because they also announced, for example, their licensing program for accessories, and we'll see accessories which are branded works with Nokia or made for Nokia or Carl Zeiss with Nokia. And the two I saw were the Z-Mote Bluetooth joystick and the visualizer sort of headset thing from Carl Zeiss, which enabled you to watch a cinema type screen with glasses on your eye, and confusing. There'll be some photos on the site of it, but again, you know, it's all about Nokia partnering with people and being much more open to developers than they have been in the past. And on the whole, it was a pretty compelling message.
Yeah. I was fascinated by your mention there in Nokia messaging, going back to that section, that integrating social messaging. Obviously, you're going to produce more on this on the site in terms of more descriptive detail, but is there any plans there to introduce any kind of location-based efforts, such as along the lines of the Ovi Contacts or Nokia Chat, where your position on the Earth is also built into that?
I'm pretty sure you could be certain that that's an element of it. I mean, it's worth saying we was pretty light on details in terms of what's going to happen and how it's going to happen. But, for example, there was a Nokia messaging screenshot which clearly showed both email and sort of stuff coming in from Facebook, for example. And I think the assumption is, you know, location is a key indice and will be available both as a push and a pull thing on Nokia messaging. So I think you'll probably see Nokia messaging maybe as the heart to handle that. Whether it will happen in one application or whether it'll be a framework running in the background, much as sort of web does for some of the web control components at the moment, we'll have to wait and see.
One thing I'd like to know, Rafe, is listening to those announcements, you things like, oh, we've got a better email client coming up, we've got better IM coming up, we're helping developers with some stuff. What was your feeling, not from Nokia, but from everybody else in the room, of how much of this is new and innovative, and how much of this is Nokia putting in basic building blocks, you know, I'm not quite saying Nokia catching up, but Nokia getting up to a baseline. How much sort of reaction from the room and from the attendees did you get? Did it feel like Nokia were driving forward, or is it a case of, oh, finally?
I think it's probably fair to say there was a certain amount of, you know, this is all stuff that's going to happen in the future. What can we do about, you know, doing business with you now and doing stuff right now rather than, you know, anywhere between 6 and 2 years down the line? But I think it was also a positive feeling that Nokia were making the right moves. I'm not sure it's necessarily fair to say, you know, catching up, you know, obviously with the App Store, there's the Android Marketplace or the iPhone App Store. but not
and the BlackBerry one. Don't forget the BlackBerry
one. And indeed the BlackBerry one or the Orange application store or any operator deck for that matter. But, you know, Nokia were pushing the sort of social and the location elements of it. And we'll have to wait and see, but that does seem to be quite a compelling differentiator. And I know there were several developers who were saying, we produce local content and that's going to make a difference to us. I think, you know, developers are a very hard audience to please, but there was certainly a degree of optimism around that Nokia were maybe making the right moves. I think developers still have day-to-day frustrations trying to work with Nokia because it's a big company and it's not always as nimble as they would like. But I think it's probably fair to say that Nokia are implementing a vision that kind of everybody has. You look at some of their competitors and they're working in the same area, but it isn't quite all-encompassing as the Nokia vision and strategy. And this was sort of noted by the last speaker of the Developer Summit, who was an analyst from IDC, and said it's actually difficult to compare Nokia with any of its competitors, be it Google, Microsoft or Apple, simply because the scale and the breadth at which it is operating and its vision is working just can't be compared to anything else. You know, iPhone is concentrated at the high end of the market and probably always will be. And sort of even Google is limited in its some of its market reach and, of course, isn't doing devices. Whereas Nokia and the Symbian Foundation, which are clearly tied closely together, you know, are doing that, and their obvious services, you know, it's difficult to think of another mobile company having quite that breadth of vision. So not really a full answer to your question, Ewan, but hopefully that gives you some insight.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks, everybody. We're going to draw it to a close here because we've just run over the half an hour mark by a few minutes. One brief reminder that you can catch each of us, in addition to allaboutsymbian.com, also on Twitter. Now, I've finally joined the Twitter crowd, you'll be glad to know. So you can find me at Steve Litchfield with a T, Litchfield with a T, on Twitter. There's Rafe Blandford and Ewan Spence, all without spaces. So find us there, catch up on our personal thoughts, and, of course, on the main site. And we'll catch you all next week. It's a goodbye from me, Steve Litchfield.
And a goodbye from me, Rafe Blandford.
And a goodbye from him, Steve Litchfield. That didn't work. Oh, nuts.